You're the big, big boss. You tell me what to do, and I gladly do my job. But I don't like your attitude.
Welcome to the Leadership in Tech podcast series. This is Paul Maslany again, bringing you our 18th episode, titled Will AI Take Over the World? Our guest this week is a man from the artificial intelligence field, a man named Ray Plant. Listen along as he explores his work and the possibilities of AI with our co-hosts, Zach and Errol. Before we get started, I would like to remind our listeners that Leadership in Tech releases a new episode weekly on Tuesday. You can find our show notes, our past episodes, our blog, and more online at www.techonramp.com. If you'd like to reach out to us, you can do it on our website, as well as on Facebook and on Twitter. Both of those are at Tech On Ramp. Thank you, and we hope you enjoy the show.
Now tell me, who do you think you are? Besides a person who happens to be in charge.
Welcome back to the Tech On Ramp podcast. This is Errol Dobler, Leader 193, with Zach Ruiz, SALT, combining for the Tech On Ramp. So I'm kicking this thing off because we have an amazing guest from the artificial intelligence world. Ray Plant has been kind enough to take his time to sit with us. And so between Ray and Zach, I think I am about tapped out on all I have to offer for this episode. when you guys start getting into it. Ray, welcome.
Well, thank you.
You want to just tell us a little bit about yourself before we get started?
Sure. As I said, my name is Ray Plant. I'm a developer who has had the opportunity to work in the past 4 years in the area of artificial intelligence at a small startup in Kendall Square, Cambridge, working on problems germane to the AI world, such as classification and recommendations, and different kinds of recommendation systems.
This is what I want to do. So my website is salt.io, and I'm thinking about changing it to salt.ai. AI companies get all the work these days.
Is that true? Are machines not only going to take our jobs, but then you're going to take all the work from the regular software guys as well? Is that it?
Right, mistake.
Well, you know, the horizon right now is kind of wide open for what's out there. But a lot of the, you know, even some of the basic tools and understanding of like their proper places that the proper fit for them and the proper application of those tools, and how to integrate them are still definitely very much in their infancy and youth.
No, but if you believe the newspaper, then machines are going to be hosting this podcast. Errol and I are out of jobs, probably by next year.
Yeah, I mean, they're you know, what makes for good press and good sales pitches often is a little bit above and beyond the reality of what currently is or likely to be achievable with, you know, less than, say, a nation state's funding.
So, do you think we're safe for, like, at least the next couple
I think
episodes?
This week we're good this week. You know, I mean, like, last week, if you had a chance to see the OpenAI group received a pretty large grant for the next 3 years from the Open Philosophy group of $30 million to do research on, you know, basically the concern that you know, in some point in the near future, there will be a takeoff of intelligence to the super intelligence to level, to where very quickly there'll be major disruption across all areas and all fields.
That's when, like, if the machine learns how to program, then it can program itself and just get bigger and bigger.
Yeah, essentially. That's a general way of putting it. But basically that the instead of, you know, being needed to be trained but and fed through humans, it can achieve that on its own.
It starts training itself.
Yeah, and growing, and the fear is the direction it grows and how it grows. You know, how do we control that? What do we look out for? So, you know, some of the things that they're going to be researching is, you know, how to bake in precautions, how to detect when, you know, the Skynet is coming about.
I was just about to say it, Skynet, right? I mean, they had it right on Terminator, what, back in 19, whenever that movie came out, so.
But at the same time, you know, it's kind of going back to this, you know, every time there's a new technology, there's a giant concern or fear or worry. And this one, like anything, like nuclear power or anything else, there is a potential huge danger that a lot of people, you know, smarter than me, have a perception that we need to watch out for.
Yeah, but and, is it like days away or years away or decades away?
As we were prepping for this, right, you guys mentioned the Red Scare, and I'm like, oh, wait a second, I might have something to say about this. Russian organized crime, you know, nuclear proliferation, and then that's not what the Red Scare is, apparently, in the AI world.
Oh, yeah. I would think that, like, from a time perspective, you know, groups like the OpenAI group, you know, they're situated to kind of expect something, you know, within the next, say, 20 years or so.
20 years.
Yeah. So we're not talking about next year. But then again, everybody, when predicting the future in technology, says 20 years because it's long enough that, well, you know, your career might be done. You won't be called out if you're wrong, but not so far out that you won't be alive to reap the rewards of being famous if you are right.
To claim the benefit, to claim the credit.
Solving the life problem so that we live forever, which a lot of tech people are working on, or the superintelligence?
Maybe both. Maybe the superintelligence helps in the field for improving. I mean, we always have to remember, like, at the end of the day, it's a tool. It's a tool that we use to leverage for other things, not in and of itself. And I think part of the fear with oh no, what's going to happen when it becomes conscious or something like that is this belief that it in and of itself, outside of us, has a purpose and has a reason, and that's just something that I'm not at this point so worried about. You know, it's a tool, it's an extension of us. It's like the network that we networks that we use to communicate right now. You know, back in the 60s, AI, you know, a lot of great work was done. Actually, some of the stuff that we're just starting to utilize now because we have the ability and power to do so. You know, a lot of these discussions were done, the same discussions and fears were from the 60s.
Yeah, tell me, you were telling me about that before, so the theories are really old, but just now do we have the ability to experiment
at the scale. Theories. Yeah, and you know, build on them. You know, I'm not saying that all our current, you know, work that is on the edge of the AI world was already done in the 60s, but the core statistics, math, and backing for, like, machine learning, what we're doing now, we're all on the cusp, on the being pushed, you know, during the late 50s, early 60s, and into the 70s before it started to wean out because the horsepower wasn't there to achieve the results that they're able to look for. So the growth was sort of hamstrung.
What's an example? Can you give an example of something that we're looking at today?
Sure. I mean, if you look at, you know, I mean, everybody, you know, the when people say AI right now, they talk about, they're really, you know, most people are talking about, you know, machine learning, deep learning, neural networks. And, you know, the basic format of neural networks and constructs were established, you know, the concept of perceptron, one of the early building blocks of the neural network. I mean, that was done, I think, in the early 60s, late 50s, and, you know, definitely by the 80s, there were basic trivial neural networks in place that people were running, but it wasn't until more recently that they were able to do more than just basically the equivalent of, you know, your simple logistic regression to like what we call deep learning now, and the development of back propagation, so you could do deep learning at multi-layer neural networks. That came about in the late 90s. So here you had, you know, from the basic elements to how to construct a simple neural network to a more practical, usable neural network that has, that's capable of deep learning, with the advent of back propagation. That's 30 years.
30 years to get there to where you can run it now. You can have 150 layers and you can play Go.
Yes, exactly. And it was more of like a bunch of work in the 60s, and then nothing or very little for, you know, 20 years, and then boom, within the past 15 years or so, 10, 15 years, a rapid ramp up, and now it's like the center of all
of everything. Which is why I'm going to rename my website probably after this episode.
Well, what was the 20 year lapse? What was that all about?
There's no computers.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what they found out was they were doing a lot of investigation in all areas of artificial intelligence, natural language, and doing a lot of work with like linguistics and you know, early functional program like Lisp, and they would build these models and these systems, but the amount of computing time and the amount of complexity for getting simple results.
And access to computers. You had to be in the right research and access, lab, yep, to even have access, mm-hmm, to the super fancy. Right.
What they found out, you know, what it seemed to be was that as the, you know, late 70s, early 80s, that you could achieve with much greater simplicity, simply hard coding and basic rule-based logic, and to solve some of these. So instead of having to have some, you know, grand intelligence to achieve decent results, they could just hard code in sets of logic rules to fall through
and make, yeah. You know, if I got your credit card right now, I could go spin up 10,000 computers, right, today in the cloud.
Right.
That kind of access, anyone can get those computers anytime if you have money.
Right.
It wasn't there forever.
Right.
Right. So you had to work at the right research lab.
Right.
Or
right.
Government group to have nearly the computing power to even play.
Right. Right. Right.
And one other thing recently, you know, within the past, you know, in the past 20 years, there's been a lot of focus from the visual side, from the graphic side, on developing these very specialized video processors for
GPUs.
For doing, you know, basically rendering polygons for doing, you know, whether it be animation, movies, video games, or whatever. Well, the same type of matrix multiplication that is used to do those massive graphics computations is the same exact computations that you're doing for training and then running your neural networks. And so people have been able to leverage that technology within the past few years, because, you know, your generic generalized CPU in your computer isn't as optimized for doing those calculations. And so some of these cards have thousands of processors on them for doing graphics within you know, a single GPU.
It's why, like, they say all the best tech comes out of government, the porn industry, yeah, and gaming industry.
Right.
Those three alone cover up everything.
All right, so let me interject then with the meathead segment of this, because there are, as we have a nice tech following, there are a couple people who listen for the leadership aspect of it. So I need to go back to Skynet. Okay, Skynet, 1984. They came out with this movie. Give me your impressions of Terminator 1984 and the idea of Skynet when they were talking about how the machines just started to think for themselves.
Yeah, well, that gets back to that whole, you know, concept of their having a purpose or a need to talk or become conscious or to become whatever. You know, going back to, you know, in relationship to Skynet and what I was saying earlier about like these discussions in the 60s, you know, one of the things even in those early days is they also realized that there may already be a conscious intelligence of these connected systems, you know, with the internet and everything, that we don't even realize that there's this conscious entity. We're already a part of it, and we keep thinking that there's going to be this day when basically Robbie the robot's going to wake up and say, "I am now your leader," whereas we already may be within that system.
Well, because we're in the simulated universe.
Exactly, like the Matrix, yeah.
This is not the base reality.
Exactly.
Which, do you understand
so
that?
You guys, I went...
Blow your mind.
I went to the Terminator, and you guys went to the Matrix.
Yeah, totally. This is definitely not the base reality.
Yeah, I think a lot of our fears are a lot. I think a lot of the fears that we start hearing from people, a lot of those fears are based because of the term. It's sort of, yeah, it is sort of like this ham-fisted that like one day, this one moment, there's just going to be this thing, and then there's going to be physical carnage, the nuclear bombs going off, exterminate the humans. And that sort of actually is part of the, you know, in the Matrix, right? They realized they needed to subjugate humans to be an energy source. You know, there's always this kind of like the machines realize we don't need people anymore, and that's okay. But you know, if you look at our look at organisms, you know, our brains, right? You know, our cortex was a later development in our neural system, our brain, you know, like our spine and our spinal cord. And I'm not a neuroscientist, but you know, there are much more primitive areas of our brains that handle things like breathing, our heartbeat and so forth, because we developed a cortex and we can think and we can make a decision of whether or not we want to drink that fifth shot of vodka or not. Doesn't mean we eradicated our those other functions. Mm-hmm. And the same thing goes for this. You know, we're building this. This is an extension of us. This is really a model, an extension of our own brains to do things at a greater scale to emulate what a human augmented to the nth degree could do. All right. When we do achieve this, and we do achieve this ability, this magnification of the brain, if we haven't already achieved it, like I was saying, you know, there's, to me, it seems kind of absurd that we're going to say, okay, yeah, now we don't need that lower function, the individual.
Right.
And so, boom, nuclear bombs and eradicate them. That would be like us stripping out our spinal column because, well, we can play chess.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. That's getting a little deep. Did you read... Go ahead.
I was going to say, I love it. I love the analogy.
Did you read the Wait But Why Superintelligence articles from like last year? He did like a huge long series on like playing out how it could happen. It was a pretty interesting set of articles.
Oh, no, I didn't.
I forget them.
You forget them?
Yeah.
We were hoping you were going to carry us on that one.
Sorry. who wrote them?
The Wait But Why guy. Who writes like really long articles like once a month or something. It was fascinating. It talked about how there would be a machine that whose job was to write letters.
Right.
And, like he would write letters, but then the paper would run out, and so the machine needed to fix it, so he had infinite paper. And so it just sort of kept spiraling up until the machine logically concluded he had to exterminate humanity so he could keep writing letters at the most efficient way. So I think he got a hold of nanotechnology and it got weird, but it sort of made sense if you read the article.
Yeah,
and you know how he exterminated humanity? Are you Sarah Connor? He bought in Schwarzenegger. Okay.
No, Schwarzenegger who's going to save
No. The first one. Oh, right now. All right. So, Ray, we talked. Having you as a guest and talking about this stuff is amazing. You know, but in the end, we like to talk about the human element. We like to try to figure out where leadership plays a role in this, and really just even if it's not leadership per se, but you know, what's the human role in this thing? You talked a little bit about before we got started, you know, the expectations set by the sales team towards the company that they're selling to. Walk us through a little bit of that, where you feel leadership in developing this stuff and introducing it, or just the human touch on it.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, we spiraled off into the discussion of, the hysteria. So I think, you know, leaders at this point should be helping walk people back from that cliff, bring them back to more realistic, aspirational, near-term things that can realistically be accomplished.
And we're so far away from that sort of ultimate concept.
Yeah, it should be just off the table. And it's not saying that we're driving with our eyes closed, because we're like with the opening, we're not. People are looking into this, but you know, it's using your company values or your organization's values in deciding how and the things that you're going to implement. Because that's right now with the intelligence, you know, the big fear for me realistically, it isn't the intelligence, it's individuals doing nasty things with the intelligence, whether it be cyber crime, or tracking people's children for profit, so it's really up to business leaders and teams within organizations when they make decisions about where they're going to go, what they're going to work towards. That's in the near term going to drive the safety or crisis of intelligence, not the intelligence itself.
So you're saying be wise in what you choose, what kind of problems you choose to solve with AI.
Sure, that's a good start. Sort of like nuclear power. The first thing that we built were bombs, great, we have a nuclear crisis. Would that have been the same if war didn't drive the nuclear program, and if we first developed small reactors for power and then developed the bombs? Who knows? But it definitely would have not had a period of fear in the 50s and 60s and panic of nuclear annihilation.
So talk a little bit. So I'm a business leader. I decide there's a use case for AI in my company.
Sure.
Talk a little bit about setting expectations around actually implementing that AI.
Yeah, I mean, a business leader needs to talk to many different levels of individual, and what they present to the board versus what they actually lay out for their team to do can often be, in two different layers of granularity.
You're bored, we're going to solve everything.
Yeah, right.
Team, make it work.
So, right. I think the clearer the vision that the leader has, and the clearer that they can, the clearer and more concise vision that the leader has, and the strength and completeness to which they can convey that down to the team, and to set those very clear goals of what those expectations are and what the intelligence is going to achieve, allows their organization to take those, translate them into very clear metrics, and with a feedback loop between the business leader and the team, work towards achieving them. I guess also a willingness, like right now, I think there is some, because this is a kind of a new area of technology for a lot of companies, the idea that you're going to have a whole lot of leaders with a tremendous background and a well of information in their tool belt is probably not the case. It's minimal because it just hasn't been. Maybe in 10 years, you're going to have these CEOs and other business leaders that have grown up in building.
No, I mean, AI we still stuff. Have CEOs that have never used email.
Well, I just, you know, what you said has really resonated with me from a, you know, on this podcast, we've really talked on the very micro level of leadership. But let's talk about the macro level, right? That idea that, you know, if we had started, you know, developing nuclear energy towards an energy grid, you know, my dad was in the energy business for years, and he just was so frustrated that nuclear power wasn't more part of it. He understood it. He got Three Mile Island, God forbid. But he would go on and on about the benefits of nuclear energy. And so as we're talking about, do our leaders of the future with AI look back on that lesson learned, nuclear energy, to say, if we had just been more responsible and used that technology, as you said, Ray, instead of for the bomb first, we might be then more able to do things from the ground up. And then when it was time to make the bomb, everybody can say, wait a second, this is not the direction we want to go.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And it's the same can be said for, at least if that's what I'm hearing, for AI in the future. The business leaders and really the political leaders need to be on their game on this.
I mean, this goes back to this whole concept of why we can't have nice things, you know. All that needs to happen is one organization or one group to do something very, very bad with intelligence. And, you know, we may get to a war. I mean, governments aren't rational, and they'll do policy, and they'll do they'll put structures in to prevent or to hinder development for private individuals if they perceive a threat. You know, you've seen this in areas such as like medicine, you know, any area. And so, you know, as soon as a company comes around and finds a way that they can use intelligence to say, snoop on the CIA or something, you know, or do something that shows that they have more power than the government or whatever, you might see a backlash, and the people may be, you know, out of either fear or whatever, you know, making it, you know, research in that in artificial intelligence, you know, monitored like, you know, research in nuclear power was monitored, you know, mm-hmm. or research in, disease control, you know, like the CD. You know, we have the same, actually, very similar, I think, situation right now. It's in much more of a limited area. As opposed to artificial intelligence, which can be used in like across the board areas, but like research in infectious disease, they have
the CDC,
yeah, the CDC or people, anybody doing research or work in that, instances where they're unable to publish papers or they can't do peer review, so the research is stymied and slowed down by all of these additional legal protocols to prevent the danger of a malicious actor getting a hold of something like this and, you know, dropping some super bug in New York. But the effect is it basically grinds some of this research to a halt.
Right.
And the same thing could conceivably happen with artificial intelligence. And hopefully that will be nicely edited to be a little cleaner. But the idea of being, yeah,
said it right.
So the leaders are you know, have this opportunity to do things in sort of the up and up way.
This time around.
And to this time around.
Right.
Will they do it? Who knows?
We need to get you on that.
I'm telling you. Look, I think that the way to solve all that is to go back to teaching cursive in grammar school with
that would help.
On a chalkboard, and I think let's get back to the basics. That's my solution. But
do we still have to write our checks in cursive?
I don't know. I think that was pretty amazing, right?
That was
a unique touch on a lot of different things. Is there something you want to you want to shamelessly promote or?
No. One topic that I didn't get to touch on off of the last thing that you brought up was the I think, you know, understanding that the leaders will not have for a number of years this cachet of knowledge to rely on and understanding. It's that also being tuned to the boots on the ground as far as feedback, as far as what is achievable, and not to try to necessarily resist or shoehorn so much the actual implementation. So there's going to be a direction, there's going to be a concept, but there has to be a graceful forward and back and fine tuning of those goals.
Right.
Don't know a better way of putting that.
So you're saying they need to listen to the researchers?
Definitely, definitely. They have to be, especially now, because they may be missing great opportunities, and they may be chasing, you know, or attacking straw men. You know, you can blindly charge into a completely useless product that completely misses its mark, or does exactly the wrong thing.
Well, that's
perfectly.
I wonder if we're in an AI bubble in a sense, because a lot of people, it has so much hype, a lot of people are charging and saying AI is going to solve this, solve that, and it can't yet.
Maybe, but I think that the thing is, like, I don't think we've seen the full extent of the bubble. It's still being, you know, created.
Still blowing
yeah into. Like this year was definitely, if I were to say anything, you know, this is the year of the AI, and over the next year it's going to increase. Why? You know, no bubble gets created without some success, and we are seeing lots of wins in many different areas. They can play Atari games easily on your home computer. You can train your own intelligence using an Atari emulator called Stemula.
They can run social media campaigns.
Yes. I mean, there are a number of wins that are going to be seen over the next year, which are going to continue to push this, and they're going to be very, very, very lucrative wins.
That's why I'm renaming my website. I mean, it's got to be salt.ai.
Well, let's do this, right? So circling back to the very beginning of this, when we said, you know, people make the predictions, everything's 20 years out, you know, so that way they won't be in the industry, so they won't be held accountable, but they'll still be alive so they can take credit for it. Give us the Ray plant in 5 years, in 10 years, in 20 years. Here's what we're looking at.
Oh, I'm awful at this. I just lost a bet last year when Bitcoin took a big dive after an amazing ramp up in a short period of time.
It's up now, though.
It is up now. That's the bet I lost. I made a bet that by March it wouldn't be above $300, and I lost that bet to one of my friends who's one of my colleagues that. You know, is very much into cryptocurrency.
You said above $300?
Above $300.
It's above $1,200.
Oh, yeah.
You just reminded me.
Thankfully, I didn't short sell or anything. It was a $50 bet, so I'm horrendous at these predictions. But I would say that what's going to happen is we're going to have a period of time where there's going to be kind of a shakeout, where there are going to be individuals that are going to be pushed out of various occupations and jobs, as always. But it's not going to be as crazy, because there's going to be new opportunities that open up because of this. And I don't know what those are, and I can't predict those. But you know, I kind of see a parallel to, you know, if you look at like just development on the web in general, you know, there's a time where media didn't pay attention at all to the web, and you know, by 2000, everyone had to have a web presence, and those that didn't started falling by the wayside.
Created a bunch of jobs.
But it created tons of jobs. But a lot of jobs were lost going into the 2000s. You know, major media outlets, newspapers and stuff like that, big decrease. But then it did open up the door to other areas, and you know, all the micro bloggers out there, or online marketers. I mean, it does open up other avenues. You just have to be able to adapt and adjust. But every time there's a disruption, yeah, there's going to be some people that don't come out on the positive side. But that's just the nature of things.
Okay, so final prediction: 20 years to superintelligence, more or less, over under.
My prediction is we will never achieve the superintelligence that people predict or fear.
You're way over. Okay.
Yeah, I'm way over. I believe that there already exists there already exists this intelligence.
Do we live in the base reality?
Yes.
Okay. Boom. Are you Sarah Connor?
Great job.
That's it, everybody. We hope you enjoyed this interview. We are happy to be bringing in more guests like we did last week with the creator extraordinaire, Mark Billows. The Leadership in Tech podcast series is a part of a project called the Technology On-Ramp. It is a 10-week educational program for candidates preparing for their first jobs in the technology sector. You can find out more about us at www.techonramp.com. At the bottom of the homepage, you can sign up with your email address to receive episode announcements, as well as leadership tips and professional development resources in our email newsletter that is scheduled to launch soon. To find out about the players involved in the Tech On-Ramp, check out Errol Dobler at www.leader193.com, Zach Ruiz at www.salt.io, or you can check out both of their profiles, including mine, Paul Maslany, on www.poddb.me, which is a directory for the people behind the podcasts in the podcast world, from hosts to guests to executive producers to sound guys, everything. Not only can you listen to us on iTunes, but you can tune in on SoundCloud, Google Play Music, Player.fm, Pocket Casts, and Stitcher, with more coming soon. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to next week.
Tell me what to do, and I'd gladly do my job, but I don't like your attitude. I don't like your attitude.